This narrator advises that the listener digest the following as entertainment. The showrunners behind it are neither six-figure filmmakers nor professional critics. They are casually critical.
Hello and welcome to Casually Critical, a podcast show starring two pals who love to talk about storytelling. I am your host, James Newton.
And I'm Daniel Carpenter, your co-host. Today is going to be an interesting break from form from our conventional episodes in the sense that the show that we are going to review, The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, we haven't seen all of it yet. Not all of the episodes are out as of this recording. But I watched episodes 1 and 2. James, how many episodes have you seen?
Just 1 and 2.
1 and 2. Okay.
I rewatched them right before we recorded.
Awesome. Yeah. Keep them fresh in the brain.
Yeah.
And I believe episodes 1 through 6 are currently out and 7 and 8 have not yet come out yet. But, this show, despite us having only seen the first 2 episodes, has left quite a taste in our mouth, and we will unpack that a little bit, non-spoilers at first, and then later leading into spoilers. But before we even talk about Rings of Power, I'm curious to know, just on a casual note, let's talk what's been going on in the film and animation world recently. Illumination, as of this recording yesterday, which should give you listeners some indication as to how far we work ahead, they came out with the new teaser trailer for the Super Mario Brothers movie, infamously starring Chris Pratt as the voice of Mario. And I'll be honest with you, James, not as blatantly bad as I thought. But before I continue, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
So sometimes we get really beautiful teasers like this now and again. I'll say up front, Chris Pratt is a terrible Mario. It's just not working for me. He should be Italian. And Chris Pratt is not Italian, and this was just a bad fit. But the teaser looks pretty cool. The visuals are interesting. Focusing mostly on the villain is interesting. Bowser looks scary, You know, can't lend that to Illumination. They didn't design the character. But it's a well-packaged teaser. Wait for trailer 2. I always think trailer 2 is whenever they break character. Not trailer 1. Sometimes trailer 1, you get a mixed response. So this was just the first teaser. Trailer 1, we get some of the cool stuff from the teaser, and then maybe a little bit of Illumination dung-flavored spice. Trailer 2, we get all the bad stuff. The stuff that they're going to air on YouTube Kids, the stuff that they're going to air on whatever streaming service your kid is into right now. Trailer 2, which, you know, maybe it'll drop a month from the time that this recording comes out. I don't know. That's where we'll find out what the movie really feels like, tone-wise.
Yeah, and this teaser was excellent for the most part. The humor was surprisingly subdued, but this sounds weird for me to say, based on how the voice actors are carrying these characters, or in Chris Pratt's case, dragging the characters, I can tell that the sense of humor is different than what we're getting so far in the teaser. I don't know why, but the way that the actors are approaching their lines of dialogue, somehow I just know that the sense of humor is on a different level in the worst way possible than what we're getting in the teaser. And this is not, to your point, James, the teaser is not the film. In fact, the teaser is the least like the film because they haven't fully launched into marketing yet. The posters are ambiguous. We're just getting the back of Mario. We didn't get the front. We're not getting all the characters. It's very misleading. Some of my most favorite movie trailers of all time have been the teasers, and it's gone downhill since. Force Awakens is an example of consistent, good marketing, so I'll give them props for that. But that's unfortunately not the norm. I'm thinking about Cars 3 with the ominous Lightning McQueen where he's barrel rolling into the racetrack, crashing and burning. We don't even see his face.
McQueen is down.
Exactly. We don't even see dialogue. We don't really get a lot. We just get that shocking visual. Frozen 2, infamously, at least amongst the two of us,
yes,
has a teaser trailer that is awesome and quiet and silent. It just shows. It doesn't tell. And then it tells. And then the movie came out. And so teasers have been known to mislead the audience. And so I think on its own, Illumination has done a fantastic job, or at least the trailer house that they hired to do this teaser has yep. done a fantastic job packaging this. This looks like the teaser is probably one of the best video game teaser movie teasers of all time,
yeah.
which isn't unfortunately saying a lot. However, we need to be aware that this is in fact teasing the movie. We're not getting a full taste yet. And I, for one, am just anticipating the moment where the cracks start to show, the humor starts coming out a little bit. I feel like this will be a movie, based on the teaser, if I can predict, this is going to be a movie where Bowser kind of changes the genre into something a bit more intense until Mario encounters him. But all the scenes just with Bowser are going to be intense, kind of like Tai Lung in Kung Fu Panda. And then Mario's kind of the Poe who's like, I don't know what's going on, you know, stuff like that.
But he's Bowser is voiced by Jack Black. So how can we not expect there to be some real, like, genuine hamming it up with Bowser?
Yeah, yeah. And that's where I worry, because the cast, the teaser tells me, hey, this is a fantasy movie that knows when to be funny and when to be serious and dark. But the casting and the company, that all tells me this is going to be a family-filled, pandery romp that's unfortunately a bit more corny and cheesy and corporate than the trailer and teaser might initially suggest. So the teaser tells me one thing. Everything else I know about the movie tells me another. I don't know.
Let me offer one little spark of hope here.
Okay.
So the poster that we got maybe 2 days before the teaser.
Yeah.
It says Illumination X Nintendo at the top. My only scrap of hope for this movie is that Nintendo had so much corporate production influence on this movie because they're very protective of their IPs. How many of their games go on sale, even their old ones? None of them. It's a very rare occasion that their physical games go on sale because they're very protective and it's a gold label, you know, video game company. So maybe they'll bring some of that protectiveness to the production side of things. This is the first time I believe Nintendo has ever produced a movie.
Yeah.
But maybe their influence will win some things over.
There's obviously the 90s Super Mario Brothers movie, which wasn't received very well. So I think Nintendo has that extra incentive to be protective of this property, especially because that was a live action movie. This is a lot closer to the actual appearance of Mario.
And at the time of the release of the Mario Brothers movie that's live action, Mario was not quite as much a beloved character.
Mm.
There have been three generations probably of video game lovers now that are very nostalgic about Mario. Whenever that came out, I'm pretty sure Mario wasn't even in the homes of video gamers. I'm not sure. I'm not sure the whole console timeline. Maybe Mario was still just in the arcade. Anyway, that's just the one little spark of hope I wanted to present. Nintendo is very good at producing things. So if they have any influence on it at all, it will take some of the Illumination edge away.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'm really hoping that Illumination can deliver that. Because if you think about it, this is just, in a way or two, this is a massive freelance project. Nintendo is the client, Illumination is delivering it, and you want to please your client. So if Illumination is as good at corporatizing their films as they have been, hopefully this is where that can actually work in their favor. We'll see. But casually critical listeners, please tell us your thoughts. I have no doubts that another trailer is going to come out before the movie gets released. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And if you want us to review the movie, you know we love us some Illumination. So please don't be afraid to leave some comments or at least send us a message on social media at Casually Critical Podcast.
And I'm certain there will be another opportunity when our 2023 movie forecast episode comes out at the top of the year for us to discuss this. And we'll have a lot more to say, I'm sure. Probably more tragic things to say. We'll see.
All right. So that's been fun, but let's dive in into the Rings of Power. So James, kind of setting the stage for our listeners, especially people that are newer to our podcast. Lord of the Rings is deep for us. It runs deep. And it has, as we learned in our first casual correspondence episode, it has fundamentally influenced who we are as creatives, as filmmakers, not just the movies, but the books. The movies and books aren't just a big deal for us. They're a big deal for the culture. They fundamentally changed the way that fantasy is told. Fantasy stories are told. Fantasy wasn't really taken seriously before Lord of the Rings. It was a kid thing. It was fairy tales. Then the movies kind of changed the way that we tell those stories for the big screen. So both the books and their adaptations have caused ripples and shifts in our culture and in both of our lives. So all that having been said, in addition to the fact that when Amazon bought the rights, which wasn't easy, they bought the rights not for the Silmarillion, but just for the movies and their appendices. This is arguably right now the most expensive show ever made. The total coming in around $1 billion and over $50 million per episode. And this isn't including the $250 million used to purchase the rights in the first place. So James...
So wait. The first 10 episodes are $1 billion?
No. In terms of per episode, is it the most expensive television show ever made?
Okay. Wow. So,
yeah.
I know they have aspirations to make more after that. I think there's a plan for 5 seasons as well. So
yeah, there's plans for 5 seasons. But James, $1 billion, roughly, give or take, 700 million, 800 million. It's around $1 billion. And with all the importance that the original OG Lord of the Rings trilogy has had in our lives, was the show worth it?
So let's look at The Fellowship of the Ring that came out in 2001, or maybe 2002. The amount of context and understanding of the characters required was bar none. There was no need for required reading prior to watching The Lord of the Rings. I mean, a lot of people read the books before they watched the movies. Other people did it the other way around. I know I did it the other way around. The movies led me to the books. Rings of Power, however, a $1 billion project so far should not be kept by gatekeepers that say you need to understand the Lord of the Rings trilogy of movies. You need to have a basic understanding of Middle Earth in order to watch this. This show makes it very hard for a new viewer to jump in, which I think is why they put the title Lord of the Rings in front of it. We're apart from our main cast from Lord of the Rings, we're apart from our main setting in Lord of the Rings, we're apart from the main plot threads, for the most part, of Lord of the Rings. We're not working with a whole lot of intertextuality here.
Yeah.
And we're still making it incredibly hard for people to access otherwise. In terms of the money they sunk into visual effects and costumes and sets, it looks pretty good. It does. It looks pretty good. It's not cinema level, but it looks pretty good. It's very impressive. Let's look at our Hoodwinked episode really quick, if you can backtrack. A movie that is flying on a, I think we estimated probably $5 million animation budget.
Yeah, give or take.
And look at the simple, accessible, and quality story that came from that. We jump back to Rings of Power. We look at all the pieces. We say, people are having trouble getting into this. They're changing a lot of things about the original stories. It's very pretty. But that doesn't make it a good story.
I think you bringing up Hoodwinked is a perfect example, because I think this is the exact antithesis of Hoodwinked. Yes. Hoodwinked had no budget. This had all the budget. This is a movie that a show, a series, that does look and feel like a movie. I would argue it is very cinema-like. I think in its quality, it is as close to cinema as most shows ever come. The visual effects impress me. There is a scene involving a troll in the very beginning where the troll looks really good. And I was thinking in my head, okay, over $1 billion, almost $1 billion. The director of photography, the DP, the guy in charge of lighting and cinema work, I feel like he got his wishes. I feel like he got all the lenses he wanted to play with, all the cinema lenses. He said, oh, I really want this micro lens for the close-ups when characters are looking at maps and writing stuff down. It really gets the detail in there. And they said, sure, yeah. And he's like, really? They said, yeah. Oh, all these lenses you want, we'll give them to you. The visual effects team, they're like, hey, we need more time. And they're like, sure, yeah. Make this troll look really good. Make these creatures look really good. Make these locations stick out in the background through these many, many helicopter shots. Okay. You know, and Bear McCreary, the composer, he even said in a quote that he had a lot of creative freedom. Howard Shore, the OG composer for the Lord of the Rings trilogy, he composed the main theme of this show. And then Bear McCreary just got to play with whatever, you know, he got to do his work. And the music's amazing. The cinematography is beautiful. The visual effects are almost, I wouldn't say seamless, but they're up there. They're
quite good.
They're gracefully woven into the story. So this should be an amazing series. I mean, you have all the stuff going for you. You have all the money. And yet, it's the story where this is lacking. It's the story. I get the sense that, especially with Game of Thrones, with the new spinoff series House of the Dragon that's getting a lot of traction, this is going to be a forgettable series. I don't think we'll forget that Amazon made a spinoff Lord of the Rings show. I don't think we're going to forget that this exists, but I do think we're going to forget really quickly what the contents of this are.
And it really is a pity that we won't have the stats to look at, Daniel, because this is a streaming service, so we can't really measure how well the show is doing, except right. by viewership. But I don't know if we'll ever get to learn those numbers. We don't have a box yeah. office record we can look at.
I think the reason why we're titling this episode the way that we are is the fact that, at least for me, I don't, as we've orchestrated this before, having only seen the first two episodes, I don't plan on finishing this series. I don't think it's worth my time. Actually, the entire series, and I'll get more into this in the spoilers, I was interested, mildly, but I was never invested. I was never sucked into the story. I watched right. it from a glass aquarium, and I was on the outside of that aquarium, and I was looking at it, I'm like, oh, this is a great visual aquarium. Some of the fish look cool. It's pretty to look at. I don't hate the fact that I have to look at this, but I don't care about it. I'm not in the aquarium. I'm not swimming amongst the fish. I don't really care if any of them die or live or whatever. And after I finished watching the second episode, I went on Wikipedia and read the synopses for what happens to the rest of the series. I just don't care. And after reading it, I was never thinking in myself, oh man, I should have seen that in the series. I just read it and I went, oh, okay, that happens. Sure. Whatever. Cool.
Can you articulate a little bit more about why you don't feel like you are in the story, why you don't feel like you are connecting to the characters?
First off, it's the plot. It spoils nothing to say that Sauron is the big bad and we seem to be building up to him, which why? James, I am so tired and sick of Sauron as the main character. He was the big bad in Lord of the Rings trilogy. Spoilers, they defeat him. I know that there was a false defeat in the beginning of Lord of the Rings. They tell you that he seemed to be defeated, but his essence remained. This seems to be, I don't know. It's the bad part of prequels. And
they even shoehorned him into The Hobbit, too.
Yeah. We've already had this happen before. I don't understand why Sauron needs to be the big bad. Now, I get that because of rights, Amazon couldn't use characters from the Silmarillion. They could reference them. They can reference events in there, but they can't tell a story set in that time. And so they reference Morgoth, which I know enough Lord of the Rings lore to know that Morgoth is a bigger bad than Sauron. He is really powerful. And they reference that. And I actually really like the visual effects and music and vibe of a lot of the first episode. The big dragons in the sky ripping apart these falcons and they plummet to the ground in a fiery mess. I loved it. I am here for big monster go boom, right? But then the intro does a terrible thing. they say Morgoth emerged, this big, powerful, evil menace, and then he was defeated. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounded like it would have been a cool story, but okay. Then Sauron, his servant, emerged. It shows Sauron in his armor emerging, and I'm like, okay, all right. And then he too disappeared. And I was like, so why should I care? And then we pick up where Galadriel, a younger Galadriel, is searching for Sauron, and she's going on a quest of vengeance. And I felt drained because I thought, okay, I feel like all the cool stuff's already happened.
Yep.
Morgoth's gone.
Or is going to happen a couple thousand years from now, which we've already seen.
Morgoth is gone. Sauron's disappeared, and he isn't dead. He just disappeared, and Galadriel's like, he's still out there. And everyone else is like, no, don't worry about it. And I'm like, why would everyone else react that way? I don't understand, James.
Could we maybe hinge our plot on something else, on something that hasn't already come to pass or isn't skulking in the background? I understand that it was Tolkien's vision to make evil originate from a singular source. But there are still some cool plot threads between the quote-unquote good-aligned characters in this show that I feel like could be milked a lot more.
Yeah.
Like, for example, one of our main characters is tasked to look over a village of human people. He's an elf, and he's tasked to keep watch over this village of human people. They don't like him. They don't like him there because they think that he thinks that they are still supporters of Sauron.
Yeah.
There is conflict with Galadriel and the elves because she still believes that Sauron is out there. They do not. There's disagreement. We do focus on that quite a while, actually, and it's pretty boring.
Yeah.
But there are a few other reasons why, outside of a villain problem, that this show isn't captivating for me.
Mm.
Part of it is because the characters' flaws are never apparent. Not any of them. And we'll go more specific in the spoiler review about one of the characters specifically that is the worst and most egregious. But characters don't apparently have flaws. We do get a save the cat moment for some of our characters.
Right.
Which wins us over and says this person is capable of good and worth paying attention to. But it's also the way that they're written, I feel. The way that they speak is cold and for the most part, detached, which is cool for an elf character.
Right.
But for a human character, I don't know.
Yeah, there are some moments too where the dialogue is inconsistent. It's mostly Shakespearean, kind of that old English style that the prose that Tolkien used for The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit trilogies, or at least The Hobbit book and The Lord of the Rings trilogy. But then there are some times where they'll say like, okay, or I don't know, like they will lapse into casual English and it doesn't feel consistent. There are times, especially in the beginning scene, the opening scene, where they're overly philosophical and I spaced out, pulled out my iPad, started playing some Clash of Clans as I was listening to the dialogue. I didn't care. It bored me. I would have rather something happened. I honestly don't care about giving away details of the plot because I still don't feel like I know any spoilers yet.
Mm-hmm.
But Peter Jackson, one of the biggest and I think best changes when it came to adapting those things was the added urgency. There were scenes that played out where it's like, oh my gosh, a darkness is rising and it's wasting no time in trying to get that ring. We need to go now. We see Nazgul emerge from the Black Gates. We see them pursuing and killing people and villagers and trying to find this ring. In this series, we get, a mark appears. So evil is out there somewhere. And we don't understand what that means. There's a subplot where there's an evil force that destroys a town. I'm not going to spoil more than that, but we don't really know what that means for us timeline-wise. All we know is evil is still out there.
One reviewer I was listening to said that they are borrowing a lot of mystery box storytelling from J.J. Abrams, which I wholeheartedly agree. There's a lot of just like, here's a question we'll pose. We won't steadily feed you any information about it. We'll just keep it looming overhead for hours on end without answer. Yeah. Without characters making any endeavor to solve those mysteries either.
And I can't help but think of our Severance review. There's two things, there's two key areas in story that Severance does inherently so much better. One is that mystery box thing. The questions that keep me pinned to watching Severance, which again, if you haven't seen it, listener, watch it now. It's more worth your time than this audio review is.
Yes.
But Severance has these questions like, what's going on? What's this company like? And all these story questions that make me want to learn more. There's a shot at the end of episode 2 where these characters hold up something and look at something, but there's a prop in the way that is cleverly obscuring what that thing is, and I don't care. I thought about it, I'm like, oh, they're trying to make me interested in what that thing is. And then I thought, oh, I think I know what it is. And then I thought, I think I know what it is, but even if it isn't, I don't really care. And then I read it later on the Wikipedia article. I know what the thing was. I still don't care. I don't care. It wasn't captivating to me. Didn't need to be withheld from me. And it feels like they don't trust their audience. The last thing I'll say that Severance does inherently better is, and I mentioned this in our Severance review, I always felt in Severance like the most interesting conflicts, the most interesting places for me to be as a viewer, I was there. I was in the room when it happened. The only time I didn't always feel that way was the season finale, where every single plot thread was incredibly interesting to me, and I was always around all the plot threads. Here, it feels like the opposite. Everything is boring, and they're trying to make me interested by zipping me around, and I just get exhausted. It feels like Stranger Things season 4. It feels bloated. There's so many different characters, and there doesn't need to be.
The problem about comparing that to Stranger Things is that whenever we look at the first season of Stranger Things, where we have seemingly disconnected plot threads that all come together,
yeah,
we get a little taste now and again, especially in season 1 of Stranger Things, of what that evil is, and we see it from different perspectives. In this case with Rings of Power, we're continents away from each other. The only shared context that these characters have, a shared experience that they have so far, is seeing a comet in the sky.
Yeah.
They all see the same comet. That is the only thing that is linking them to this point, 2 hours into the show. And is that enough to connect them?
No.
No, not yet. And it's not enough to hook me.
It's drawn out. Infinity War did this just as well, I think, as Stranger Things season 1, because we're already so invested in all the characters and everything they did was of equal importance, just in a different way. Here, I get drained. Whenever something finally becomes interesting in one thread, we cut away to something else. And I go, what? But no, put me back. I don't care about these kids. I don't care about this person. I don't care about this romance going on. Get me back to the good stuff. And then they get good, and then they cut away again. And I think to myself, what? No, it constantly starts boring, then builds up, then gets boring again. We cut away. Then it gets interesting, then it gets boring again because we cut away. And I just, it's visual muck. It's beautiful, but what's the point? I feel like this is several hours long of a DP's demo reel. I don't think it's actually a good story.
One example of that, I think, which I do think is trying to keep the mystery suspended, right? There's a scene where it's like, oh my gosh, what's this hole in the ground doing? And then it's like, ah, someone rolled their ankle in another part of the world. And it's an example like that that does definitely break the momentum of the story. And there's also no rising action in each individual episode either. The episodes appear to be saying, we're a streaming service, so we can kind of do whatever we want with pacing because people are just going to watch it all at once. I'm not going to, because I almost fell asleep.
If you're listening to this review and you like if you like Rings of Power, and then you realize, you know what, I don't think this is actually that good, and I'm sad because I wish it was good. I want a good fantasy that has different threads that don't seem connected, and then they do, and I want good visuals, and I want good visual effects, but this doesn't give that to me. What do I have? I would recommend The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. Watch that instead.
That's good.
It's exactly like Rings of Power, but it's better and it has good story. That, watch that instead. It's exactly like Rings of Power. It's a prequel series that's a spinoff of an original franchise that everyone loved, or at least was very weirded out by. And it's really well done, and it has a star-studded cast and disparate threads that eventually connect together to form one cohesive thread, interesting villains that also make a comeback in the original material it's based on, good animation, good visual effects, a labor of love. Watch that instead.
And if you love Middle Earth and you're like, should I watch Rings of Power? I would say no, because this doesn't feel like the Middle Earth that anybody has known yet. This is a new interpretation, which is what every PR blast has been about this show, is this is a different interpretation of Middle-earth. Don't judge it according to Peter Jackson. Don't judge it according to Tolkien. And I'm like, okay, I won't. I will judge it as a completely separate and bland piece of fantasy streaming, like Wheel of Time, or I don't know. I can't think of another fantasy series at this point that's lackluster.
I can think of others, but I can't even remember the series names off the top of my head.
His Dark Materials. That's another one. Actually, a more interesting concept than Rings of Power, but still not super compelling.
Yeah.
Good visual effects in that one. Check that one out instead.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like Middle Earth. So if you love Middle Earth, don't worry. Just don't watch this. This doesn't feel like Middle Earth anyway, because all the things that make something feel like Middle Earth are not here. They're all taken and changed. So don't worry about it. Go watch the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings movies instead. That'll make you feel better.
James, before we head in our spoiler review, out of 5 stars, based on what we've seen, not having seen the whole season, but just the season so far, how would you rate this?
I'm giving it 2 rings out of 5.
I'd have to agree.
Yow!
I'll end by saying this, James. In a weird way, this series, just the first chapter, actually inspired me. It inspired me to go out and make art, regardless of the quality. Here's why. There is a moment, 51 minutes into the episode, where the audio clips, you know, whenever you yell loudly into the microphone and then like it flatlines the audio because it can't go higher and there's a clipping noise. If you know what I'm talking about, then I guess you know what I'm talking about. The audio clips. And I replayed that scene back, that one dialogue back, a few times at different volumes to see if it was my speakers. It wasn't. The audio recording was either that bad or they screwed up the export or streaming experience on Amazon Prime, which is embarrassing considering they could have fixed that mistake, and yet it's been several months or weeks since the first episode came out. I just realized, oh my gosh, in an almost $1 billion budget with several dozens and dozens of millions of dollars per episode, with the best cast, the best lenses, the best visual effects, the best music, there's still mistakes. Still perceivable mistakes. I can't remember audio clipping at all in Hoodwinked. And that's a super low budget film. They said, whatever little we put on screen, we want to make sure it's at least effortful, presentable. And so I'm like, wow, if Rings of Power can still screw up from time to time, what excuse do I have to at least throw something to the wall and see if it sticks?
That's a good point. Inspiration in weird places, Daniel.
Amen. Amen. But we're just getting started with exploring the weirdness of Rings of Power, so let's go into our spoiler review.
Want to join the conversation? Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Casually Critical Podcast to get the inside scoop on future episodes. Feel free to message us on either platform to join in the casual correspondence or provide feedback on the show. Now it's time to dive into our spoiler review.
Okay, we've had a weird map transition, transitioning us into the realm and scary continent of spoiler land. So we're here now. James, what are some of the show's biggest problems from your POV?
So to jump further into the idea of there doesn't feel like a tangible threat.
Yeah.
You made a joke just now about map transitions. I don't know where the evil's coming from. I don't know why. And I don't know how. I have no clue. So why should I be anticipating a character to react a certain way or do a certain thing. We get talk about the Southlands. We get talk about up north where Galadriel's looking for Sauron. We talk about the threat to the east, something going on to the east. Where's the threat coming from? I'm a little baby. Explain it to me like I'm a little baby. Just tell me, because I want to know. And it's not because the mystery is killing me. It's because you're giving me no reason to invest. How are the enemies, how are our protagonists going to prevent Sauron returning if we don't know what there is to be done about it?
Yeah.
What does this have to do with the Rings of Power anyway? What does this have to do with the rings forged for elves, dwarves, and men that eventually become conquered by Sauron's one ring? Where's the connection?
Well, James, it's a five season plan. And so the rings will come later, but we need to work on first making the rings before we distribute them. And before we make the rings, see, we need to have a forge to make them. And so we need a plot thread detailing the making of the forge so that we can do it. But before that, we need to forge an alliance with the dwarves to make the forge. But before that, we need to follow Elrond so we can make an alliance with the dwarves, so the dwarves can help the elves, so that the elves can make the forge, so that the forge can make the rings, so that the rings can get distributed. You see? There's a point to it.
Daniel, I had an expectation with this show regarding the Rings of Power themselves, the actual objects.
Yeah.
And that was, this show is going to follow the heroes worthy of wearing these rings.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There's so much richness alone. Like, power corrupts. We know that the nine men eventually become Nazguls. How does Sauron entice each and every one of them?
Uh-huh. Can we meet all of them?
Is there a tragic figure? Is there an Anakin Skywalker? A guy who's really powerful who has the ring who's like, I won't be corrupted. And then he does. He's like the last man who's uncorrupted. And it's tragic because we as the audience know eventually he becomes corrupted. There's so much you can play with, even us knowing how it's going to end up. There's just it.
But instead, we know where we're going to end up and we are taunted for it. I want to gear shift to Galadriel really quick. We know that Sauron is alive. Galadriel's only flaw is that she is reckless and believes that Sauron is alive. We know that Sauron's alive, so it's not a flaw, because we know that Sauron's alive and Galadriel is right. And everyone's going to come groveling to Galadriel and say, we're so sorry, we were wrong. And so now we know Galadriel's perfect. She's perfect.
Yeah.
Because she knows the thing that the audience already knows, just from a gut feeling, just an intuition.
A lot of people said in defense of the show, well, you thought, token heads, that there would be politics shoved in here, but there isn't. See, it's actually just a good fantasy film. I don't know if there's any blatant political agendas that are shoved into this series, but there certainly is cultural corruption that has permeated this film. The hyper-competent females, the dumbing down of most male characters in the presence of a strong woman to make the woman look better. And that frustrates me because it's lazy. If I want a character to look good and I have to make the others look dumb, I don't have a good character. I have a lazy, lazily developed character. James, I want to talk to you about science for a moment. Scientific theory and hypothesis.
Ooh, wow, science.
Yes.
Give me a lesson.
Let's go back and sit down in my Science 101 class.
Okay.
Let's refresh our memory based on the little I know, because I'm an artist, not a scientist. In science, to the best of my knowledge, you make a hypothesis. Then you take the variable you want to change, and then you take the constant. The whole point of a constant is it's something you know won't change regardless of the thing you're about to change. You can throw a new stimulus at it, and it won't do anything. It won't affect it. Every single character in this, the main big players, are all constants. The conflict does not affect them. It just passes through them. Galadriel's constant is, I know Sauron's out there and I'm going to kill him. And everyone else says to her, no, no, shut up, get on the ship, go die, go to the afterlife, you know, go away. Go do this, enjoy the ceremony, shut up, get it done, don't talk about Sauron anymore. And it doesn't seem to affect her. The only time it affects her is she says, okay, I guess I'll go on the ship. But that seems out of character at that point. It seems, you know, and she jumps off the ship, even though we all know she's not going to go over. And they're like, is she gonna, the gate's opening up. Is she going to go over to Valinir or whatever that place is? No, she's not. And I'm like, oh, shocker. Great.
And, we already knew that. By reading the books 70 years ago.
Yeah. And we also know the fact that she's in the Lord of the Rings movie. So she, I don't know.
So even 20 years ago, we knew that as a mainstream audience, we knew.
Yeah.
That she wasn't going.
And Arendir, the elf guy, who is actually one of my favorite of the characters, he has this romance, and I don't care about it. Every single stinking subplot is an elf falls in love with a human. Oh, it's forbidden love. I haven't seen that before. Wow. Haven't seen that in The Hobbit. Haven't seen that in Rings of Power. Lord of the Rings was the only one that was good, and that's because it was baked into the story.
Ugh, Daniel, what other shows are streaming? What other shows should we be watching? Just remind me, before I fall asleep.
Okay.
What's the good stuff in the world?
James, you seem to be falling asleep. Let me try and jog your memory and snap you back awake. There's a comet that hits, and there's a man inside. Do you want to know what happens next to the man? You want to know what happens?
What?
Well, he can't really speak. We're just going to hang out. We're going to wheel him around. But then he wakes up. Whoa. It's the next day, so he wakes up. But he's nonverbal, and he kind of mumbles. We get some lame, like, chosen one thread with the girl. And but then he communicates. He uses magic again. But it's like fireflies. And the only information we get in two whole chapters is that this guy exists. He's powerful. Wow. And he's looking for like a constellation. He's not from here.
He has magic. He fell from the sky. He talks to bugs. It's Gandalf, yeah. Right?
It must be one of the Ishtari, I think is what they're called. That's my one theory. Knowing the show, I'm going to be right. And it's going to be so much more dragged out because the way that they make moves in the story, James, is they tell me, and this is the vibe I got. I don't know if you got this. They're telling me, we don't have much in the way of plot, so we're just going to keep, we're going to try and drag out as much time as we can between major plot points.
Oh, yeah, no. They're padding for time. They're for sure padding for time, and this thing with not Gandalf, or maybe it is Gandalf, is being dragged out so that we can spend more time with Galadriel, who went on the boat for no reason and is swimming back so that they can pad for time.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You can give your characters detours like that. You can have them go on a boat, make a mistake, and go back, but you just need to make sure that they learn something that made that detour worth it.
Right.
You don't want Galadriel to just go, oh, you know what? Actually, I changed my mind. Oh, wait a second. They did. They totally did do that. Did she grow as a character? Nope. And then we meet Halbrand, played by Charlie Vickers. And you can totally tell he's going to be another character because it's like an animation that's really crappy and all the other characters are poorly designed. And then you have one average Joe, quote unquote, who's in the crowd that has really good design, really extra detail that was paid attention to him. And then you go, huh, I wonder if he's going to join the group. And then he does. That's exactly what Halbrand is. And I don't, as soon as I saw the handsome, you know, close shaved beard and really good figure, and he's kind of an edgy boy, I knew that we weren't going to kill him off.
They were really dipping into the discount Aragorn well for this guy.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. Which is weird because they were trying to depart as far from the original movie trilogy as possible.
Yeah.
Elves just look like me now, but with pointy ears. It's just me. Just an ordinary looking white man with pointy ears.
In the Lord of the Rings trilogy, elves were, they went out of their way to make sure they looked beautiful. Like no flaw in their skin. Timeless. Thank you. these, they look more like cherubim than they do elves.
Yeah, you're right. And I think they're trying to use a different visual language and say, well, men are always dirty. Like every person, every human you see has a little bit of dirt on them, whether it's, you know, on their neck or on their face or on their hands, they're dirty comparison to elves, which are always clean. Every elven character is clean.
Right.
But it's not a strong enough distinction, I think. Mm. I think the visual language that Peter Jackson uses in the 01 to 03 movies is way more distinct. Humans have more grit to them in the way that they move, in the way that they talk.
Yeah.
There's more diversity within each human and elven race in this show, which should be good, but it also makes everyone feel the same. Besides the dwarves.
Yeah, the dwarves are great. You know, Prince Durin has some dignity before his wife absolutely rips him apart. Says, what's wrong with you? And don't get me wrong, I think her character is one of the more lively ones in this whole series.
Yeah.
I'd rather spend a whole episode with her than hardly anyone else. Her and probably Arendir. Which, by the way, let's talk about Arendir for a moment. Because he's the only character, I think, that has a save the cat moment. A moment that gets us to like his character. Where he walks in and he has this appearance of a badass. And they play up this trope, this one guy, this one not racist. Who totally is. And he says, we don't want your pointy ears around. You know, all that. That's actually a dwarven accent. Never mind the Scottish accent. Anyway, the guy is upset. The bartender says, hey, cool the fire. And he offers him a drink. And the guy just slaps it down. And Arendir looks at him coldly. And I think, okay, he's going to totally, like, destroy this guy. But he doesn't. He simply reaches down, picks up the drink, hands it to him, and walks out. And I went, wow. A small subversion of my expectations. For once, the writers didn't go the route I expected them to go because it's cliche. And it gets me to like him.
They even go further. They even take a further step. The bartender attempts to punch the racist guy.
Yeah.
But Arendir catches his fist.
Right.
Like, clearly, he is not into anyone defending his honor. He's not into the violence. Yeah. He's got nothing to prove to anybody.
Yeah.
Tells us a lot about him.
It tells, and again, you portray him as a strong, confident guy, and I learned that through that scene. I don't need it reinforced like Galadriel, where it's like, I know I'm right. I know Sauron's out there. Here's the frickin' the first opening scene. I feel like episode one has the strongest good and bad out of all the series, because some of the opening images I loved, like the images, not the actual opening image. But that one scene where they're in the cave and they fight that troll, on paper sounds awesome. You have a group of elite elven warriors led by an awesome commander. They go into this abandoned labyrinthian place where dark magic was performed. Then a frost troll emerges and they have to kill it. And it's gritty and dark and I love it. It feels like a D&D campaign. But then you think about the context and the story and it's not as fun. Galadriel is so hardened, so callous, so inhuman, she almost lets one of her men die of exposure. And she's like, no, leave him. We got to keep going. And I'm thinking, okay, that's an anti-save the cat moment. I don't like her. I hate her.
Simultaneously, Daniel, that was supposed to be her save the cat moment. Because
seriously?
Immediately afterwards, someone says, Commander, we need to stop. And she turns around and puts her coat on the dying guy's coat. And I'm supposed to be won over by that somehow. And you're right, Daniel. On paper, that scene is really interesting because they're fighting a troll in a cave. But not only that, the cool commander, she is not well-liked by the people she's fighting alongside. Can you show us a little more of that instead of just telling?
Yeah.
And on another note, with the troll, the fight scene wasn't very good. It really wasn't.
No.
It was over, done and over very quickly.
There's no tactics the elves use, these elite warriors. The troll throws this object at them from a respectively far distance. I figured using their elven agility, which they have, their grace, they would have jumped out of the way. But nope. No, they all get clobbered. All of them. It's a perfect move from the troll. The troll has more tactics to outsmart a dozen elite elven warriors than the elves do. And then you have Galadriel, who is weirdly disproportionately more powerful than any of her men. She leaps and fights and single-handedly destroys this troll, which has leveled her group. Lazy, lazy writing.
and it could have been really cool, but I just didn't even feel like I was in it. The camera work wasn't very good. I felt like specifically the camera shakes with the troll. The troll felt very light, and I just feel like that's foreshadowing for future action. That's all I'm really trying to say about this.
Yeah.
If this action is choreographed and feels the same way as the rest of the action in the series, I'm not going to be interested.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's also a repetitive trope and gimmick they use, which is it's not even a trope. I think that's too dignifying. It's terrible. I don't like it. Every single time someone questions Galadriel, either her or the plot shows that character was wrong. Like that exposure scene we just talked about where someone's dying of exposure from the cold, the blistering, brutal cold. And then Galadriel says, "We got to keep moving." And they're like, "It's impossible. We've been doing this for days." And then we're not even where we're supposed to be. We don't even know where it is. And then boom, we're where it needs
to
be.
We're there.
And then the guy goes, "You know, I don't like this. We should leave. There's nothing here," whenever in the abandoned stony or snowy place. And then boom. Galadriel says, "Wait a second." And then she sees they're exactly where they need to be. We have Sauron's sigil, so we're close. I don't know. Us and the characters are getting punished for questioning Galadriel. Oh, yeah. You questioned her? Well, here's why you're wrong.
Exclusively her. I mean, most of the other characters are not like that, which is why I like them more.
Yeah.
They still don't have apparent flaws, but at least they can be wrong.
And I feel like the writers said to themselves, okay, Galadriel's one of the bigger figures. We can't have people hate her. So we're not going to take any risks. In fact, any opposition against her, we're going to shut it down. And that's not good writing, you guys. That's not good writing. If you don't have good conflict.
How do you root for her?
Yeah. She's going to kick butt. If she enters a scene and draws her sword wanting to hurt a guy, the guy's going to get hurt. If she wants to kill a man, and it's most likely going to be a man, given how they're writing female characters, the man's going to die. Or get hurt, regardless of his own experience in battle. But if it's another woman, then maybe Galadriel will get hurt. I don't know. One other thing I want to touch on. Hoodwinked did this really well. I said that Hoodwinked had a lot of homemade spice with their scenes. They had a lot of cliches, but they freshened them up enough to where it was interesting and the story was really good. Fairy tales have been done to death, but Hoodwinked did it different and really well. Lord of the Rings does this really, really well. Let's go into Moria. Oh, shoot. Now it's more of a horror kind of thing. Interesting. We're dark. It's in a cave. There's a sense of claustrophobia. There's no getting out of this. Oh, a fire giant. Crap, a Balrog. We got to fight it. Rings of Power is literally just people talking, but in slightly more interesting environments. For example, the Harfoots, they're just kind of in a forest, and we don't really get a lot more than that. At least in the Shire, there were hills, fireworks shows, parties, the visuals changed on us. There was more interesting elements added to change up the world and the dynamics and the environment. Here, we have the Harfoots, which are literally just dialogue scenes with people in a forest area. We get Galadriel and the elves, which are just dialogue scenes in wooded elven areas. We get her at sea, which is her dialoguing, but in sea areas. There's some change up with the worm, but then it kind of goes away. I don't know.
It's funny, Daniel. We get a lot of that shot reverse shot stuff that you were talking about with Moneyball.
Yeah.
A lot of shot reverse shot. The conversation happens. But then they try to mix it up with these really uncomfortable close-ups, which I normally really appreciate in shows and movies because we get an idea of how the character's feeling. But it's always very disruptive.
Yeah.
We get a close-up of Galadriel's face, for example, at the beginning of the first episode, while she's talking with Elrond out by the coast, and he's visiting her. She's visiting him. Get this uncomfortable close-up. And then suddenly it switches to a sweeping shot above both of their heads. Instead of gradually moving in and out, we're moving way in and then way out, and it's almost nauseating. And sometimes it's unnecessary.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really notice that. Because I kind of had a crush on the actress who played Galadriel, so I wasn't really focused on the shots. I was like, wow, what a pretty face. And then it just transitions out back in. I was like, oh, cool.
It all comes out now. Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. And now everyone, all of China knows now, too.
All of China knows you're here. Yeah. The more I talk about this, I'll be honest with you, the more bored I become.
Yeah.
If someone hired me, they said, Daniel, we want you to come out and do season 2. assuming, of course, I'm not getting paid large sums of money. If they just said, Daniel, can you come out for free and just try and fix this? I don't know if I'd say yes. I just feel so bored. I would think, I don't know, guys. If someone was already watching this, I might sit down and watch it with them. But if I was with a group of people and they said, let's watch Rings of Power, I would go, can we do something else? Like play a board game or watch another movie or anything else?
Well, I'm going to be quietly watching this show on the side, just sort of while I work. I'll probably have it on one monitor, you know, that sort of thing. And maybe sometime you'll have to check in with me and I can vaguely explain how things are going.
Okay. I will probably listen to the soundtrack. I love me some Bear McCreary.
There's the
other God of War game coming out, so this will be a nice primer before I sink my teeth into the soundtrack of Ragnarok. I, for some reason, the God of War main theme, I just keep listening to it, and it's never gotten old for me, which I can't say about any other soundtrack.
There's almost little sprinkles of it, the male vocal parts especially,
yeah,
and the dwarven themes. Whenever they're in dwarven parts of Rings of Power, you get some of the male vocal stuff that Bear McCreary really doubles down on in the God of War games.
Yeah.
The dwarves are great, by the way. I should probably say that. Love the dwarves. Glad that we get more dwarf time in this show. Probably one of the better parts of it.
Yeah, the dwarves are great. I feel like there's an interesting thread that they never really fully tug on to my satisfaction regarding the disparity of lifetimes between elves and dwarves. And that kind of never, that thread never really gets pulled on enough for me to go, ooh, they really explored that. They kind of touch on it. And then the guy gets man-shamed by his wife, who says he's an idiot and got to get over himself because apparently men can't do anything right in this for the most part. I don't know.
We need to pad for time, Daniel. Durin and Elrond can't be friends because we need to pad for time. We have to build another wall in between them so that we can tease the mystery box that his dad has.
Whoa. Oh, man. He has glitter that he doesn't know what to do with. The dwarves discovered glitter in the mountain.
After we're done recording, I do want you to tell me what it is.
Okay.
Even though I'm going to continue watching it because, frankly, I don't care.
Excellent. Well, guys, thank you for listening. We're Daniel and James, and you've been listening to our podcast, Casually Critic.
What time is it?
Time for me to end the episode. Okay, cool. I think we're... Oh, crap. I left the record button.